It's the day before the spring break, and how many people showed up?
The hearty, the good. It's the 29th of May. March, 29th of March. And are you working on chapter 6, 7, 8? Yeah? All right, chapter 7 is a toughie, because I ask you for the tenure. That's not too difficult to find, because that's on Morningstar, Yahoo, CNN, Money. But the 20 year, the 30 year, they don't want you to know. So you have to call them up and directly, call up the mutual fund directly and ask them, or go on their website. Maybe you'll go on their website, probably won't. So yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tricky one. We're up 10.5%, which means we're down a couple of points from Tuesday. So things, it was 13 last week, then it was 12, and now it's 10.5. But still, no, look at Apple, look at Netflix is doing well. But today, the little bit of a down day, people are worried. A little bit of preview of coming attractions. We're going to continue working on Chapter 10, bond valuations, today. We may finish, we may not. We have calculations to do. If you weren't here on Tuesday, you want to pick up one sheet of each of those, because we're going to do calculations. We're ready to jump into calculations. Then we're going to take a quick look, maybe the whole presentation, maybe an abbreviated version of chapter 8. It's really not chapter 18. It's just a lecture on convertible securities and preferred stock, which are hybrids, and we made mention to them at the beginning of the semester, and they're really not that important to us. But we'll take a look at them real quick. And then we're going to do Chapter 11, which is asset allocation, which tries to now go back and tie everything that we've worked in together, from short-term investments, mutual funds, stocks and bonds, and try to tie it all together and turn it into something that, you know, you get your handle on. And then we'll have exam number 4. So that should be... When we come back, you have a week off. I know you're not going to think about Southwestern at all, right? You're all good. Actually, you could put these things on your iPod or your CD player and listen to them wherever you're laying on the beach or something like that. Listen to my voice. I know. It's painful, but it's one way to learn. People have told me that it works for the online class and the like. And so we then will have a week of doing this, and then we'll have an exam, and then we start stuff that I hope you never touch, but we need to go through it. Derivatives. But ready to get started? Ready to get finished? We continue on bonds? What? I'm sorry? Okay, before we do that, let's start. We need a joke. Anybody got a good joke? Nobody has a good joke? So how about an Easter joke? Spring break joke? Want a spring break joke? Okay. What do you get when you cross a rabbit with an anesthesiologist? An anesthesiologist and a rabbit. You know what an anesthesiologist is, right?
Yeah. Put you to sleep.
Right, put you to sleep. The ether bunny.
Ether bunny.
Okay. I know. It was awful, wasn't it? That was awesome? You like that one? That's a bad sign when you start liking my jokes. All right, so we started by discussing bond yields and said that the most important thing over the long sweep of time was what income we're going to get. And we said that the unpredictable factor is interest rates, and people will tell you they can predict interest rates, and they never have been able to do so. In fact, after 2008, when Treasury yields went to virtually nothing, everybody in 2009, 2010, 2011 said, oh no, Treasury yields have got to go up, and they continued to go down. So that's how good a predictor we are. We started by discussing the types of bond yields, the current yield, the yield to maturity, yield to call, and then we'll discuss taxable equivalent yield and double tax-free yield for municipal bonds. And the first one we looked at is the nominal yield. Now, the nominal yield is very simple. What's your name, Bob? Bob, not Bill. Bob. You could say Robert, I guess. And so if I ask you what the 9% nominal rate on a 9% bond is? You'll say? 9%. But as we said, the nominal yield is not as important as the current yield, yield to maturity, and yield to call. So here we go. We're going to start learning how to do these calculations. So you want to get worksheet number 2 out. Oh, no, worksheet number 1. I'm sorry, I can't think of it. The one in the back is worksheet 2. So what we'll do is after we take a look at this, then we'll do it again. Get your calculators out, and let's work. Now, here's the annual interest divided by the current market price. So the current yield says, look, we need to calculate this thing based not on the $1,000 par value, because that changes all the time. That's going up and down, and not a whole lot usually, but it goes up and down. But we have to look at it depending on the current price of the stock, of the bond. So here's an 8% bond, and what will an 8% bond pay us? $80. Don't put 8 cents. 0.08. That's the percentage. Put $80 because it's on $1,000. So we take the annual interest. But how much did we have to pay for that interest? Well, in this case, this bond is selling at a discount. It's selling at $800. So we only have to pay $800, the current market price of the stock, of the bond. I keep saying stock. I guess I really don't want to do bonds, do I? All right, so $80 is what we're getting, but we only need to pay $800 to get that bond. I said it right that time. And 80 divided by 800 is? So really, we're getting 10% currently from this bond. Because we had to pay $800, but we're getting $80. So $80 divided by 800 is 10, right? And the same thing is true in reverse on a premium bond. If we're looking at the same $80 bond, but in this case we have to pay $1,200 for it, it's a premium bond, we divide the $80 that we get every year, divided $40 twice a year, divided by 1,200, and you get 0.066666, or about 6.67%. Oh, by the way, it's a good idea to always show two decimal places, unless like this one it's exact. It would be kind of silly to do that, but you could. But it's good to show at least two decimal places to the right of the decimal. That's up to you. Some people do three. The nominal yield is again 8%, but because the bond is selling at a premium, the current yield is only 6.67%. So let's do number one on the worksheet, which is exactly the same. The bond pays 9%, is currently priced at $1,200. What's the nominal interest rate?
9%.
Everyone just say 9%. Wait till I ask you.
9%.
Wait till I ask you. A bond that pays 9% is currently priced at $1,200. What's the nominal interest rate?
9%.
What's the coupon interest rate?
9%.
9%. See, catch it. What's the coupon interest rate?
9%.
Coupon nominal rate are the same. Now, what's the current interest rate? Ah, so what's the market price?
$1,200.
And if it's a 9% bond, how much are we getting?
$90.
So you take the $90 divided by the $1,200, and what is this bond actually paying currently? 0.075 or 7.5%. So it's paying $90, but we had to pay $1,200 to get that $90, so we're actually getting 7.5%. Piece of cake? Yes. Do you have all these? No? Pick one of each. Now, the next one is the yield to maturity. And this is where it starts to get a little tricky. Looking, it's not really that tricky. Once you work through the problem and work through the arithmetic, it's really pretty straightforward. And so the yield to maturity takes into account the price appreciation of the bond if it's a discount bond, and the price depreciation of the bond if it's a premium bond. Remember, what's going to happen when the bond matures? Are we going to get the $800 that we paid for the discount bond? No, we're going to get $1,000. And what's going to happen when the premium bond matures at $1,200? Are we going to get $1,200?
No.
No, we're only going to get $1,000. You only get $1,000 back. Do you remember the graph? Does it look like this?
You know, no. What does it look like? It
looks like this. As it gets closer to the maturity, it gets closer and closer to $1,000. And even if you bought it at $1,200 or bought it at $800, eventually it's going to make its way back to that $1,000. So,
do you only have to pay less than $1,000?
If it's a discount bond. When would it be a discount bond? If interest rates have gone down? No. Bond prices go down, interest rates go. So the interest rate has gone up, the bond price has gone down. Or if people believe that the bond was in trouble, if people believe that the entity was not going to be able to make their payments, remember the Ford bonds? We took a look at the Ford bonds, right? And they were selling for $600, even though they were paying pretty darn good interest. People were frightened that Ford was going to disappear. And, you know, it was a very scary thought. But they're the ones who did really well because they came back. All right? Now there are two. Yeah, sorry.
In that $1,200, is what you paid for a premium?
You paid $1,200 for a $1,000 bond.
Oh, for $1,000. And then if you later mentioned you didn't have just $1,000?
Yeah, so what would you rather buy? A discount bond or a premium bond? I'm with you. I'd rather buy a discount bond. But, you know, but if they're premium bonds, that usually means they're paying better than the market interest rate, so it really doesn't matter. You're buying what you're buying, and you're getting the same interest rate that other bonds are paying, but just other bonds are paying far less because interest rates have fallen, the bond price has gone up. It is a little tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, sometimes it's like...
It's still a lot more... Not consistent, but easier to understand than stocks.
Well, they're closed. They're fixed, right? That's what we call them, fixed. Stocks are open-ended.
Right.
You just never know. Whereas bonds, unless there is default, you have a pretty good, reasonable expectation. Hey, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry, right? But what I hope to do by the time we get done with chapter 11, I hope to show you that it's not an either-or situation. You know? For some people it is, but it doesn't have to be. In fact, you don't really want it to be, unless your situation is very different. I'm kind of, in that respect, I'm a little overboard. At my age, I really shouldn't have as much stocks as I have and have as few bonds as I have. I should have more bonds. But I don't care. Did you get one of each of these on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, we'll see. Maybe I'll be coming back. I'll be coming back and living with my mother or something. No, she's going to wind up living with me. There are two primary methods of calculating yield to maturity. The bond pricing formula discussed later, combined with an internal rate of return approximation. Remember internal rate of return? Later. That's more accurate, but difficult to do. That's probably a spreadsheet. Or the yield to maturity formula on the next slide, which looks scary, but it's actually fairly easy to use. And I don't know, I should really go look at one of the newer books. But on the Series 7, this is what they ask you to do. They don't ask you to do this. They ask you to do the yield to maturity formula. And there it is. And it looks scary, doesn't it? It's the same formula as the current yield, except it's been tweaked, so to speak. It's been manipulated to take into account the fact that you ain't going to get the $1,200 that you paid for the bond or the $800 you paid for the discount bond. So it's the same start, annual interest. You see that part? The same exact start, annual interest. And the bottom, instead of dividing it by the market value, the market price, What we do is we take the average of the market price and the face value or the par value. And so what happens when we add two numbers and divide by two? What do you get?
Average,
right. So you take the face value or par value, they both mean the same things, and you add to that the market value, and you divide by two. And so instead of dividing by the market price, we're dividing by the average of the market price, what we had to pay for it, and the par value, what we're going to get back when it matures, because we're doing the yield to maturity. Make sense? All right, now, what's this bad boy up here for? What's this puppy? Well, remember, as we get closer and closer to the maturity, it's going to get closer and closer to $1,000. Either from below, if it's a discount bond, or from above, if it's a premium bond. So this part of the formula, this expression, par value minus market value divided by the number of years just says, okay, how much each year is it going to get closer to 1,000? What? Why don't we do it? And then it should make a whole lot more sense. So here's that same 8% bond. We know it's going to mature in 10 years, and we have every expectation of hanging on to it for 10 years. And we had to pay $800 for it. So you got your calculators out?
Yeah.
What's the annual interest?
$80.
It's an 8% bond?
$80.
Not the one on the handout. $80. Whoops, let's write it a little bit better. $80. Now, what's the par value? Everyone just say 1,000. Always 1,000. What's the par value? Now, there might be a few bonds that you run into that are 5,000 to 10,000, but no, they're also 1,000. And then what's the market value? 800, and we divide that by 2, and some of you could do that in your head. What's the average of 1,000 and 800? 900, right? 1,900 divided by 2. Okay, thank you, Jim. I just want to see if you guys were awake. Watch it. 1,900 divided by 2. Okay, and so here's the tricky part. What's the par value?
1,000
plus minus the market value. 800 divided by how many years?
10.
So 1,000 minus 800 is 200 divided by 10 is 20. So in other words, every year that $800 bond is going to move $20 closer to 1,000. The next year will be 820, 840, 860. You see what's going on? So is it really that tricky? It looks tricky, but it's really just saying every year we're going to compute the amount that it's going to get closer to 1,000. So 80 plus 20 is
100.
Everyone should say 100. Wait till I ask you. 80 plus 20 is
100.
Divided by 900.
0.1.
Mm-hmm. 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, or about 11.11%. Does that make sense? So the current yield was 10%, but because we're going to get $1,000 back from our $800 bond, our yield to maturity, assuming we hold on to it until then, is 11.1%. Does that make sense? And then the exact opposite happens with a premium bond. So here we have the same bond, 8%, but this time its price is $1,200. Interest rates have gone down. It's maturing in 10 years. So we take the $80 divided by the average of 1,000 plus 1,200, and some of you can do that in your head, it's 1,100. And then we take 1,000 minus 1,200. Negative 200! Can you handle negative numbers?
Yeah,
okay. Negative 200 divided by 10 is negative 20. So every year we're going to subtract $20 from the price and move ourselves from 1,200 down to 1,000. Does that make sense? No? What? Does it or not?
How do you get that done?
Why would you get 1,000?
No, why would you want to do that?
Oh, well, in other words, why would you want to buy a premium bond? Because interest rates have gone down, new bonds are paying what this bond is paying, so what do you care? You could buy a new bond for 1,000 paying whatever, 5%, or you could buy this 8% bond for 1,200, which we haven't done the calculation yet, but it's 5.5%, 5.5%, so what difference does it make? You understand? It doesn't make any difference. To you, now I'm with you, I'd rather buy bonds when interest rates have gone up and bond prices have gone down, and I'm going to, Well, that's what some people did. Some people with treasuries, they went, the price went high, the interest rate went down low, and people thought, oh, this is ridiculous. But some people bought treasuries, and the interest rates went even lower, and now the prices are even higher. And I told you a couple of weeks ago, they turned, right?
Yeah.
The 10-year treasury bond went from about 1.9 up to 2.3. That's a huge move. Do a percentage. That's a huge move, 10, 20%. They started to come down now. Everybody was getting excited, like, oh, maybe the economy's going to zoom out. It always reminds me of that, he fell down. And that's what, personally, I think we're going to be for the next few years, because housing is still a disaster, folks. Housing is still a disaster and will continue to be so for quite some time. But that's an excellent opportunity. Now's the time to buy a house, folks, if you're interested.
Mr. Fayano, for the people who bought the premium bonds, they're expecting to make money, earn money from the interest rate, right? They're hoping that the interest rate go high. Because they're losing money. I mean, if they're paying...
Remember, what most people buy bonds because of the interest. So if new bonds are paying 5.45%, what do they care? They could buy this $1,200 bond that's paying them 5.45% on the $1,200, right? Or they can buy a new $1,000 bond that's paying 5.45% on the $1,000 bond. So if all you're interested in is interest, you don't care. Because new bonds are paying what this bond. Remember, this bond started paying 8%, but that was 5 years ago when interest rates were higher.
You showed a picture the other day that said the Poway bonds, they were minimum $250,000.
No, $25,000. They wanted you to pay. They wanted you to come up with $25,000.
So the minimum number of bonds you buy was
25 bonds, right?
So, and then after that, people can sell them off.
They're negotiable.
That would be a good idea to do that. Buy it from somebody at that $1,200 price if you only want to buy one or two.
Well, the problem is they're going to go away. Go away.
Not to the main person, but to the people that already have it.
Oh, start again? I'm confused. You got 25 G's.
Yeah.
You buy 25 Poway bonds.
Yes. And then let's say the people around me, they all need to get, can I buy one or two off of you, or are we going to have to buy the 25?
No. You could sell them individually.
So that would be a good idea to get those bonds to not have to put down the 25 G right away.
Get together with a few other people and buy them?
Yeah, for a few people, but buy a few instead of buying 25.
The problem is, as we said, bonds usually trade in the tens of thousands of dollars. So you can do it. You can go to a broker, but they just don't want to. They don't want to deal with you. Which is, I don't know. I mean, I'm a broker, and I don't turn any people away just because they don't have a ton of money, but other brokers do. I was just talking. I think I told you on Tuesday. I was just talking with somebody who said the broker said, "Well, he doesn't want to deal with her unless she has at least $750,000 with him." I'm like, excuse me. In other words, they want very rich people, and they want to be able to soak them. Bend over. Here it comes again. That was Merrill Stench. I'm sorry. Merrill Lynch, right. And there's Morgan Stupid. I'm not Morgan Stanley. Okay, so you with me?
Yeah.
All right, let's do number two. Let's read number two. A 9% 20-year bond, so it's the same bond, the 9% bond that we did over here, but now we know it's 20 years, has a par value of 1,000 and a call price. We'll do the call price next. We'll do the first part of it. A par value of $1,000 and a call price of $1,050. It is callable in 5 years. The bond is currently selling for $1,100. So I ask you to calculate the current yield, the yield to maturity, and the yield to call. We'll do yield to call in a minute. Let's do the yield to maturity. And you can do the yield, the current yield on your own, because that's pretty straightforward. But this one is that same 9% bond, and what's it selling for?
11.10.
And how many years is it for? 20-year bond. Everybody see what we just went through? Okay, look at number two. It's a 9%. You don't have it?
I have it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for joining the class, Anthony. 9% bond. Oh, I know. He's been breathing all day. A market price of $1,110, and it's a 20-year bond. So the yield to maturity is the annual interest. What's the annual interest on a 9% bond?
$90.
Divided by the average of the par value and the market value. So the par value is always
$1,000.
The market value is
$1,110.
Everyone back here in the cheap seats, what's the market value? Okay, $1,110. And we divide that by 2. Okay. Now, we add to the top number here the par value minus the market value. Market value is?
$1,110.
And how many years until it matures?
20 years.
20 years. So now it's just a matter of doing the arithmetic. 1,000 plus 1,110 is 2,110 divided by 2 is?
1,055.
1,000 minus 1,110 is negative 110. Negative numbers. Divide that by 20, and what do you get? So every year we're going to take $5.50 away from this bond. Add 90 plus a negative 550, and you get 84.50. Right?
Right.
I mean, you can do that in your head. And so 84.50 divided by
1,055?
0.08. So about 8.1%. No, 8.01%. Yeah. 200. All right, so the yield is 9%, the coupon yield. The current yield is 7.5%. Oh, that's a different, no, that's a different one. I'm sorry. That was a different one. That was selling for $1,200. I guess that. We didn't calculate the current yield for this one yet. That's different. Okay, great. Got it? Can you do this? It's not that hard. Now, wait a minute. The current yield on the 8% discount bond selling at 800 was 10%. But the yield to maturity was 11.1%. And the current yield on the 8% premium bond selling for $1,200 was 6.67%, but the yield to maturity was 5.45%. How is that possible? What's going on? Well, it's actually straightforward. The discount bond was purchased at $800, but will be redeemed at $1,000. The premium bond was purchased at $1,200, but again, will be redeemed at $1,000. The yield to maturity takes into account the bond appreciation from the discount price, up from $800 to the par value, or the depreciation from the premium price, $1,200, down to the par value. Now, the yield to call, and we don't really have enough room for this, but let's try it anyway. Yield to call is only for bonds that are there, where there's a strong possibility of the bond being called away. You would only use these for premium bonds. You would not use them for discount bonds because they wouldn't call it in. It's as if you had a home loan mortgage at 5% and interest rates went up to 8%. Would you refinance? No. Now why? But the other way around, if you're paying 8%, now they're about 4, you would run to your broker and refinance. So there's two methods, again, the one we're going to talk about later, the bond pricing formula, and then the same formula as the yield to maturity. Yeah? Sorry.
The call back, would that be from the people who issued the bond?
Right.
So if the interest goes down, they won't give you, they won't call it back.
If interest rates go down, they'll call it away. Because what will happen is they'll give you the $1,000, and now they reissue the bonds for less interest, right? They're paying you 8%, and now they say, what are we doing this for? We can go out and get new bonds at 5%. Let's refinance. But they don't want to do it willy-nilly because it costs them money to do this. Just like it costs you money to refinance your house. You know, it might cost you $4,000 or $5,000 to refinance your house. So usually you wait till 2% down. But there are some low-cost, no-cost finance deals out there now. You take a higher interest rate, but you don't pay any, maybe $400 or $500, which is cheap. You know, you'll pay for that very quickly back. So the same thing is true here in the corporate world, in the municipal world, except it's just a whole lot more. You know, we're talking billions of dollars, millions of dollars. Okay, now here's the same formula, folks. You see, it's the same formula as the yield to maturity. Did you get these on Tuesday? Okay, grab them. You take the annual interest, and you divide it by the average of not the par value and the market value, but the call value and the market value. So you swap the par value with the call value, and then over here you do the same thing. You swap the par value with the call value, subtract the market price, and then don't divide by the number of years to maturity. You divide by the number of years to call. I'm going to use the number sign. So see, all we're doing is swapping the par value with the call value and swapping the number of years maturity and the number of years to call. So what we're saying is, hey, let's calculate this as if it's going to be called in 5 or 10 years when the call protection period is gone. So here's that same 8% bond, but it's callable in 5 years. Its price is $1,200, and they have to pay us $1,085 if they want to call it away from us. That's the call premium, $85. So they have to pay us $1,085. Now, some of them are callable at par. They just have to give you $1,000 back. So we have the same exact thing, except now we have the $80 divided by the 1,000. Where did my green one go? Here it is. 1,085 plus the market value, which is $1,200, divided by 2. And then we add to the top expression the 1,085 minus the 1,200 divided by how many years? Just 5. Because we're assuming, since interest rates have fallen so far that the bond is selling for $1,200, that when it's callable, we're assuming that the bond issuer is going to say, get me out of this thing and pay you the $1,085 and take it away from you. And it turns out that if you do the calculation, it's the same calculation, now you're looking at 4.99%. So that we didn't put that one on the board, but if you go back and remember that one, that was 5.45% if we wait until it matures, but if they call it away from us, it's only going to be 4.99%. The yield to call was less than the yield to maturity. Yes, this is typical. This is because if the bonds are called away from us prematurely, we would have less time to take advantage of the outsized interest rate payments. Because this bond is paying us better than new bonds, but we're going to be able to do that for 20 years unless they yank it away from us after 5 years. So you want to do the number two? You want to do that one again? Number two? Okay, so it's the same bond, 9%, selling for $1,110, 20-year maturity, but we believe it's going to be called away from us in 5 years?
Yeah.
5 years? So we believe that in 5 years they're going to yank it away from us, and what's the call premium? 1,030? 1,000. No, the premium is 1,050. So the call price, the premium is $50. The call price is $1,050. So we're going to do the exact same calculation. 90 plus 1050 minus the 1110. And how many years?
Five.
Gloria, only Gloria is enjoying this? Is that what it is? Okay, 5 years. And then we divide that by the call price of 1050 plus, this is the average, so we add. I know it's a little tricky. Here you minus, there you plus. But the idea is here we're just calculating the average. So let's do the bottom first. 1050 plus 1110? 2160 divided by 2 is? 1080? Yeah? Come on, that's why you got calculators. What are you waiting for me? I don't have a calculator. Did you get it, Larry? All right. Now, 1050 minus 1110 is? Negative 60 divided by 5 is negative 12. So every year we're going to take $12 off the price of the bond. 90 plus a minus 60 is 78. So 78 divided by 1080. Are these calculations really that hard? No, I hope you think. I hope you. They're really not that hard.
The hard part is to pinpoint where the data is.
Well, you have to read the question carefully. And so, what are we going to get? 0.0722. So 7.22%. So if they call it away from us, we're really not going to get 8%, 8.01. We're really only going to get 7.22%. Piece of cake, right? Okay, good. Now, taxable equivalent years. Okay, so I'm going to erase all this because we need some more board space. Taxable equivalent years. This is only for muni bonds. Muni bonds have that wonderful advantage that you can't be taxed, or the IRS can't tax you on the federal income tax on your interest. And if we buy muni bonds in our state, then we don't pay any state income tax. So, whoops. The formulas are pretty straightforward, and we'll take a look at them. And some of you might even notice something. They look very similar to something we do in the financial planning class. The taxable equivalent yield, is equal to the muni bond yield divided by 1 minus our federal tax bracket. This is something we do when we talk about taxes in the 121 class. So if we have a 6% muni bond and we're in the 25% tax bracket, we take the 6% bond yield divided by 1 minus 25%. Well, we know that to be, on your calculator, what do you type? 0.06. Don't type 0.6, that's 60%. 1 minus 0.25, 0.06 divided by 0.75, and what is that equal to? 0.08 or 8%. Now, what does this mean? That's the taxable equivalent yield. You have to go out and find a corporate bond paying at least 8% to match the 6% return given to you by the muni bond. Huh? I don't understand. What is the muni bond paying us? If it's a 6% bond, what's it paying us? Everyone should say $60. Remember, it's 1,000. Let's try again. If it's a 6% bond, what's our annual interest?
$60.
If it's an 8% bond, what's it paying? Wait a minute. Why wouldn't I rather have the bond that's paying $80? Ah. See, this one is tax-free. The IRS doesn't like you to say, when you say tax-exempt. So this one is tax-exempt. The IRS can't put their hands in your pocket. But this one, how much are they going to take? 25% or You read in Ricardo, say $20? Okay. So the IRS is going to take $20 from you. You have to pay $20 in income tax. So what are you left with? 80 minus 20 is? So do you see why they're equivalent? Nod your heads, yes. Margo, I don't know. What the hell are you talking about, Payana? All right. Now, if you do this again at the 10% bracket, you'll find that it's less. If you do it at the 35% bracket, you'll find that it's more. So who loves muni bonds? Yeah, the rich people. Higher people in higher tax brackets love muni bonds, which is why you saw the $25,000 minimum. Pocket change. Green fees. Greens. That's what we pay on the... how much does it cost to play golf at Pebble Beach? Anybody know?
Pebble Beach.
It's like $200 and some dollars. What? It's like $280 something to play golf. You just get to play golf. That's all you get to do. You think for that, they give you a whole lot more, but no, you just get to play golf. All right, now, the double... Okay. I remember... No, I remember a friend of mine coming and visiting California, you know, from back east. This was a while ago. And he wanted to go to the zoo, and I told him how much it was. He goes, "What? I just want to look at them." He just wanted. No. He was meaning something else. I just want to look at them. You know, $100. I just want to look at them. I don't want to. Okay, the double tax exempt yield for both federal and state is for muni bonds that are in your state. So of course, that's for us in California. The formula on the next slide assumes that you itemize deductions on your federal income taxes and deduct state income taxes, which is very typical for municipal bond investors. And if you know what I'm talking about, you're going to eventually look at Schedule A when you own a home, and we do that in the 121 class, where we take our mortgage interest and our state income taxes and our DMV fees and any charitable deductions. Well, you can also deduct the state income taxes. And that's a reasonable assumption. If the people who have got a lot of money don't itemize, which is probably not the case, then the taxable equivalent yield would be a bit higher. So, but let's do it the way it would make sense to do it. So the double tax-free, the double tax-exempt or tax-free formula is similar. You take the muni bond yield, but now it gets a little tricky. You take 1 minus the Fed rate, the federal bracket, plus, and I should have an extra pair of parentheses here. I forgot to add that. Don't add them and then multiply. You know, put parentheses in here. And some of your calculators will figure it out. They'll say, oh, no, I got to multiply first. The state rate, the state tax, times 1 minus the federal rate. So what you're doing is you're saying, hey, because I don't get to itemize the state income taxes I would have to pay, I need to lower the tax rate. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. Just do the calculation. So if we're looking at that same 6% muni bond yield, we take the federal rate of 25%, add to that the state rate, and let's assume the person's in the 8%, because that's a pretty good assumption, 8%, and then multiply by 1 minus the federal rate. So now you just work your way from the inner all the way to the outer. Did I lose you already? Anybody? What?
A little behind?
Well, when we do it, it'll actually not be that hard. 1 minus 0.25 is? Everyone should say 0.75. Wait till I ask you. 1 minus 0.25 is? Come on, Alexis, get with the program. 0.08 times 0.075 is? 0.08 times 0.75 is? You guys got the calculators. God, you're lazy. And then 25.25 plus 0.06 is? 0.31. 1 minus 0.31 is
0.69.
So 0.06 divided by 0.69 is 0.086957 or 8.7%. So the muni bond from Arizona or wherever is paying us 8%, but if we're in the California bond and we're in the 25% bracket for Fed and the 8% bracket for the state of California, then it's actually paying us equivalent 8.7%. All right, so let's now take a look at problem number 4, right? No, 3. I'm sorry, 3. A married couple, right? Okay, I'm going to erase this. Excuse me. Someone read it. Somebody read it, please. Don't everybody yell at once. Somebody read it. Come on, take the initiative. Oh, crap. Thank you, Daniel.
A married couple from California is in the 35% federal tax bracket and the 11% California tax bracket. They are considering a 5% Arizona municipal bond, federal tax free, a 4.5% California bond, double tax free, or a 7% corporate bond, fully taxable. Which bond offers the highest after interest rate, after tax interest rate?
Okay, so they're in the 35% federal bracket. That means they're making $380,000 a year or more. 7%. That's a funny looking percent sign. Right. 7%. 70%. Yeah. Okay, so the corporate bond is fully taxable. Do we have to do any calculations with the corporate bond?
No.
If you do any calculations with the corporate bond, what do you get? Dope slap. So don't do it. Leave it alone. It's fine. It's just fine the way it is. But the Arizona bond, the California couple doesn't have to pay 35% on their income from interest. It's tax exempt at the federal level. So what's the formula? It's the one over there. The municipal bond yield divided by 1 minus the 35%, the federal bracket. And the 1 is really 100%, folks, if that makes it easier for you to understand. That's what 1 is. So 0.05 divided by 1 minus 0.35? 0.65. And what is the Arizona bond paying us on a taxable equivalent yield?
0.07.
And there's a couple other numbers, but yeah, that's about right. So 7.69%. So already the corporate bond has been eclipsed by the Arizona bond. You understand? Because the Arizona bond, on an after-tax basis, is paying this couple 7.69%. Now, if they were in the 10% bracket, in the 2% California bracket, would it pay that much?
No,
you have to recalculate. And then for them, that couple, the corporate bond would probably be a better deal. But check it out. Just try it yourself. Now, the California bond is double tax exempt. So that formula is a little bit more complicated, a little bit more involved, but not really. You take the muni bond yield, which is 4.5%. Decimals, what's 4.5% is 4.5, and that means 0.04. Right. Don't put 0.45. That's 45%. So be careful about that. So that'll go down here, 0.045. Now, we start with 1.0 minus, what's the federal bracket?
435.
Everyone's going to say 35%. It goes, the class will go faster, trust me. Okay. What's the federal bracket? 35% plus the state bracket of 11% times 1 minus the federal bracket of 35%.
Wait a minute, I got too many parentheses.
So 1 minus 0.35 is?
0.65
times that by 0.11.
Go.
You guys don't want to do the calculation? 0.0715? Is Gloria right?
Yep.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And 35% or 0.35 plus 0.0715 is?
0.4215.
4215. And then we take 1.0 minus that. 1.0 minus that. And how much is that?
0.5785.
And letting it water have all the fun. So take that 0.045 divided by 0.5785, and this bond is paying us 7.78. So approximately 7.78%. So which one's paying the best? The California bond is paying us better than the Arizona or the corporate bond. I should have brought a couple of calculators. What do you think, folks? Piece of cake? Yeah, these aren't that hard. You just got to do them. You do them enough times and piece of cake. Yeah, sure. It's,
Frank,
yeah.
Why is that 7.69%? Is that representing California?
No, that's the Arizona.
Oh, okay.
That's the Arizona bond. Because the Arizona bond is only federal tax exempt, whereas the California bond is federal and California. It's federal and state. If you live in California. Right? That's how it works.
Yeah.
Okay, now yield spreads. The differences in interest rates that exist among various sectors of the bond market. In general, the shorter the maturity, the lower the rate. The longer the maturity, the higher the rate. Now, doesn't this make sense? If you're going to lend money for somebody 30 years, don't you want a better rate than if you're lending money for 30 days? Or 5 years or whatever? And so it's called the yield curve. Treasuries carry the lowest rates. Muni bonds are next. And then corporate bonds yield the highest rates. And so this was as of, when was this? I didn't write down this, but it's a few weeks ago. And you see that book, the 3-month Treasury bill, 0.03%. And then this is from the book. I just grabbed these from the book. Let's take a look at the ones on on Yahoo. I thought I'd grab those from Yahoo, but let's take a look. Here's the yield curve. Here it is, right here. The 3 month is saying 0.04. The 10-year. Yeah, 2 years paying 0.33. 10 years, 2.17. It was about 1.92 a few weeks ago, and then it shot up to 2.3. Now, it doesn't sound like a big jump, but it really is. I mean, calculate the percentage jump. And it's fallen again. It's falling now. So if you're playing the game trying to, buy high, sell higher, good luck. So can you imagine locking in your money for 30 years for 3%? I mean, holy mackerel, that means that the money's... But the inflation runs about
3%.
Yeah,
not right now.
Well, that,
Maybe next year, though.
Well, yeah, you don't know. And of course, people say, what are you talking about? The gas is going up high. Well, yeah, gas is going up. But your wages aren't, and housing prices are still going down, so inflation is actually fairly subdued.
And gas isn't included in CPI, right?
It is. There's two different ones.
There's one
with and without. Yeah, you're right. The Consumer Price Index, they say, well, we exclude the volatile food and energy. As if people don't eat and drive gas and drive their cars. We've excluded those things because you don't need to eat, do you? You grow your own food. And then municipal bonds, still, 20-year muni bonds paying 3.4. See, I'm not a big fan of bonds right now. I am just scared to death of bonds for the long term. of course, the stock market can drop 50%. And then if you 20, remember we were looking at 8%, 9% bonds, but look at what corporate bonds are paying right now. 5%. So that's why we saw those Ford bonds at premium prices. Because if you want to buy a new 20-year, just a bond, a very, look at the differences are very small. Triple A, of course, is a better rating, so it gets a better rate. Not a big fan of bonds.
Is that like the best rating?
Triple A is the best. Triple A is the highest.
Right now we don't have Triple A, right?
United States doesn't have Triple A. Yeah, United States has Double A plus.
And France too.
And they've knocked down France too. France was not happy about that. So it's kind of ridiculous, folks. France, United States, they're going to pay their debts. Often investors will speak about the bond spreads as being tight or wide. A tight spread means the interest rates among the bonds are very close to one another. If treasuries are paying 4.8%, corporate bonds are paying 5.1%, that's a tight spread. A wide spread means there's a big difference between the bond interest rates. The treasuries are paying 3.2%, the corporate bond is paying 8.2%. And they don't use percentages, they call them basis points. And I don't even include it in the presentation, but you should really, I asked you in chapter 5 to look it up what a basis point is. But a basis point is 0.01%. So this is a 300 basis point, 30 basis point difference. And this is a 500 or 5%, just multiplied by 100. For several years, bond yield spreads were very, very tight. During the turmoil of 2008 and 2009, the yield spreads widened to levels not seen since the Great Depression. Corporate bonds went high because people bid down the prices. They didn't want corporate bonds. Treasury bonds yields went really low. They're still very low because people bid up the prices and they were so frightened to have anything except for treasury bonds. Here's the effect of inflation on bond rates and what you would expect. As inflation goes up, that's the red, bond rates go up. As inflation goes down, bond rates go down. And notice inflation basically went negative. In real, they say it went negative. I think it more pays zero. But after the turmoil of 2008, when wages and gold and oil and stocks and bonds and real estate, everything just fell like crazy. It still only went down 2%. And now we're about 2.5%, 3% inflation, which is the average over the lifespan of the United States. Not the United States, but over modern history. Let's hope this doesn't. Lots of people believe. You've heard of Ron Paul, right? Heard of Ron. He's a doctor, but he's also a senator or congressman.
He's running for president.
He's running for president. He and people who follow him believe that we're in for this. They believe that we're going to have huge inflation in the next few years. They want you to buy gold.
Yeah.
Gold. Okay. The yield curve is the graph that represents the relationship between a bond's maturity and its yield at a given point in time. It's also used to make comparisons among types of bond. Normally, the yield curve is upward sloping. Longer-term bonds have higher interest rates than shorter-term bonds. Sometimes the yield curve inverts, and shorter-term bonds and treasury bills and corporate paper and interest and CDs have a higher interest rate than longer-term bonds. Very unusual. This is what we normally see. This is what we normally see, but sometimes we see this. And this is what it was a couple of weeks ago. Let's take a look at it right now. There it is right there. Short-term interest rates are paying almost nothing. And then you go out, and even if you go out, this is a treasury bond, by the way. If you go out 30 years, you get a little over 3%. But this is normal. It's not usually this low on the shorter end, nor is it this low on the higher end. Usually it's more like that. But still, that's normal. When would we... Oh, I'm sorry. First, we've got to do the theories. They're not doing theories. Why do longer-term debt securities normally have higher interest rates than shorter-term securities? Well, there's a few different hypotheses. But just think about it. If you're going to lend your money for somebody 10, 20, 30 years, there's more things that can go wrong, right? There's more time, more risk for things to screw up. And if you're going to lend your money for 30 days or 90 days, there's less screw up. So that makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense that it would look like this. So read those two slides, but I'll ignore them for now. It says each of these three theories makes sense, but what factors could cause an inverted yield curve? How do we account for that? What does it mean when the shorter term interest rates are higher than longer term interest rates? Well, that's a very unusual situation. And when that happens, it's usually an indicator that we're having a recession. In fact, every time the yield curve has inverted, short-term interest rates were higher than long-term interest rates, the economy has fallen into recession. Every time, except for 1996, where the economy just touched 0% growth and then started growing again. The yield curve is mostly upward now, as we saw, but for about 2 years, longest time it's ever been inverted, before 2008, the yield curve was inverted. The inversion was not that great. It looked kind of like, I wish I would have saved something. It looked kind of like this. It usually does this kind of thing, but it just did that. And that kept on going for 2 years. So there was this huge argument going on in the media and the financial community. Are we heading for a recession? Are we heading for a recession? The bond market had been predicting a recession for over 2 years. The stock market, for the most part, didn't believe them. They just said, well, no, we're not hitting a recession. It took over 2 years, but the bond market was eventually, the bond ghouls, as they're called. And why are they called ghouls? Why are the bond investors and people who really like bonds, why are they called ghouls? Because they hate it when the economy does well. They just hate it. Why? Because interest rates go up. There's more demand for money, higher wages, there's more inflation, people are getting jobs, they're buying houses and cars, everybody's happy, except for the bondholders. Because in a recession, interest rates fall, bond prices go up, wages don't go up as high, so inflation is subdued, so bond investors love hard times. That's why they're often called bond ghouls. Cool? You like it? You understand? So watch for that inversion. Watch for that inversion.
Ghouls?
Ghouls. Phantasmos?
Like ghosts.
What's a good word for Spanish for ghoul? But usually a ghost, a mean ghost.
Mean?
A nasty ghost, a malo.
Right in the house. Right?
Yeah, they weren't ghouls, they were ghosts. Anyway, bond pricing. Oh, we got 12 minutes. All right, cool. Bonds are normally priced Bonds are normally priced according to the present value of their future cash flows. Didn't you hope you would never have to do that again?
What?
Present value calculations?
Yeah.
They're going to be on exam number 4 and the final exam. So just get used to it. Some of you can do them, so you get to do them over again. Semi-annual interest payments and the repayment of principal. Although other factors are always need to be considered, such as the creditworthiness of the issuer. If an issuer runs into trouble, the price of their outstanding bonds will fall because investors will be afraid of default. So here is the formula for pricing bonds. The bond price is equal to the present value of the interest income plus the present value of the repayment. Does this look familiar? Remember the present value of the dividend cash flow and the present value of the stock price? Nod your head, yes. If you don't, we're going to do it again. So, annual versus semi-annual. See, we really should be doing semi-annual compounding because we get paid every 6 months. But annual compounding is easier and will give you almost the exact same answers. Besides, the spreadsheet does it for us easily. So here's an example. Republic Services. Have you ever heard of them? Republic Services? What do? They pick up your trash. They're the trash man for Chula Vista. Republic Services. Parts of Chula Vista. And you might have heard of waste management. Have you heard of waste management? It's another trash collector. Are you worried about Apple's new iPad becoming a success? And Apple stocks falling into the poison oasis? Then buy Waste Management or Republic Services, because there's always going to be trash. No matter what happens, we're always going to be throwing stuff out. And so here's a bond. And the reason I picked it is because it was... Because you need the present value table. So on the back of the formula sheet, you'll see a table that should look familiar. In actuality, the table on the right-hand side, now Alexis, follow us now, okay? Stop playing the game. Okay. On the left-hand side, that's the one we use for chapter 6. Now we're going to add another table to it for chapter 10. So it's the same one and then another one. So you need that puppy. All right. This one was due 1st of March 2020. So it's a 8-year bond, right? And you notice it's we use years and interest rates, and it's a very small table, so I had to find something that was on a year and close to 4%. It was priced to yield 4.09%. Let's see what it should be worth. 4.09% is close to 4%. So let's use 4% for 8 years. Now, here's where the formula is. This is what the formula is. We're going to use an abbreviation. How's that? PV, present value. And it also reminds me of Puerto Vallarta. So PV of the interest income plus the present value, PV, of the bond principal repayment. And so this is essentially the same thing we did with the stock dividends and earnings model. We took the present value of the cash flow from the dividend income, and then we added the present value of the price of the stock when we were scheduled to sell the stock. But in this case, we're taking the present value of the interest income and the present value of the principal repayment. Now, how much interest are we going to get from a 5% bond?
$50.
Everybody understand that? If it's a 5% bond, how much are we going to get every year?
$50.
Please don't put 5 cents. Okay, please don't put 0.05. That's what some people do. And what do? I want to just give them a dope slap, right? I said it! How many times have I said it? Now, in chapter 6, what we did is we did that for each every year. Right? We did year number 1, year number 2, year number 3. And we could do that for 8 years. That's a pain in the neck. That's why we have the table on the right-hand side. Because the table on the right-hand side calculates the present value of the stream of the same payment for a certain amount of years. So go across to 4% down to 8 years. And on the right-hand side, and what's that present value multiplier? Come on, we got a few more minutes. You'll go faster if you answer me. Do you see? Everyone see it?
Yes, sir.
The table on the right, Sandra. Griselda. Table on the right. Okay. Now this is the left one. This is the table on the right. And so we then add to it the repayment. What are we going to get when the stock, when the bond matures?
$1,000.
And that's the table on the left. That's the table we used in chapter 6. Because it's a single payment. So $1,000, 8 years from now, at 4%, go across 4%, down 8 years, what's the present value multiplier?
731.
So how much is that $50 every year for 8 years worth to us at 4%? $50 times 6.733, what is that? How come Ricardo is the only one who's answering me? $336.65? Yeah? Thank you. And then if you multiply 1,000 times 0.731, you can do that in your head. $731. Add those two together and the bond should be... The bond should be worth $1,067.65. And it turns out on March 16th it was 106.690.
That's
6.733
feet.
Yeah, yeah.
5%, right?
No, 4%.
Oh, okay.
It's priced to yield 4%.
Okay.
It's priced to yield 4.09%. Let's use 4%.
Okay.
So you understand? Don't use 5%. That's the coupon yield. But when we calculate the yield to maturity, we find out it's priced to yield 4.09%. Are you with me? You understand? Okay, this one you use the table on the right. Use the table on the right. This one you use the table on the left. So go across 4% down 8 years. Do you see 6.7733?
No.
Go across 4% down to 8 years.
Same.
4% down to 8 years.
4 years right there. Okay, got it.
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, on the left, go across 4% down 8 years, and you get 0.731?
Yes.
What a great class. Sort of. Oh, you're tired, aren't you? Okay. Now, ain't that a pain in the neck, right? Well, that's why we have this lovely little spreadsheet here in Chapter 9 called the Bond Calculator Spreadsheet. And we right-click and save the target as to the desktop and open it up, and excuse opens up. No, what's it called? Access. And you can plug in the numbers, and it will do it for you. It will plug in the numbers for you. And you put in the numbers. Now, notice that the price has gone down in the last few weeks because it's maturing a little closer. But yeah, very similar. And so, you see, bonds are really boring because we know how much interest we're going to get, and we know we're going to get $1,000 back. Now, did we know what the dividends were going to be for the next 3 or 4 years? What were we doing? Estimating, speculating, guessing. Did we know what the price was going to be 3 or 4 years for the stock?
No.
No, we were, you know, putting our finger up and we were looking at Value Line. Did they know? They're a lot better than most people, but they still screw up. So you understand why bonds are so much more reliable than stocks. The real question is, much less risk. The real question is, are they going into default and then the whole world falls apart? So problem number 4 we will do when you get back after the spring break. In the meantime, there's nothing to stop you from doing problem number 4. The answer key is on the website. There's a commentary for the online students. Sit down. I wish all of you a great break. But please...
Short break.
No, it's not short. It's a whole week.
It's a whole week.
Don't you think that's a nice break?
Hell yeah, no.
Wait till you work in the industry. I worked in the industry for a few years, and you take 2 weeks off, and they don't like it. Even though you get two-week vacation.
Europe gives you 6 weeks.
Yeah, Europe gives you 5, 6 weeks, 4 weeks to start. And here in the United States, we don't want people to take their vacations.
Why?
Because we're nuts. Wait a minute, don't go anywhere. All right, any questions, any thoughts, any ideas? Thank you all for coming, and see you when we get back.